So I'll open to 1-1 and 18. Thank you. The idea is that we meet till 1 and then have a short break. Can I ask for the next week? I'm suggesting a half an hour break. We can finish early. Thank you.
We'll be very happy, Chair.
Good.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think. Thank you for inviting us. I was saying, as the new government director will be here, we'd love to come and talk to you about financial sector reform and good speech, but we'll do that another time.
Yeah, I
get jealous when everybody else is talking about the department. But anyway, so Chair, I think today we're dealing obviously with the response document to the tax, the various tax flows, which is for the first time. Okay, just so that you know that because 7 of us from South and Jersey, I think by now you know all of us. Let's move on. Right. Just to remind ourselves and to contextualize the response document, Chair. In July, we published various textbooks, including the rates book, and thereafter the TLAB and the Tax Admin Laws Amendment book. And you know, the TLAB is also split into two issues around the Constitution. And of course, we briefed the committee on the 30th of July on the proposal. And then you had hearings. And you also had a closed workshop with us. And finally, today, we're here to report back on comments that we received, that you received as Parliament, that we also received, because people may send us additional comments. And I should add that we also end up with people who want to meet with us on more details. So all of that goes into the process. It's quite a deep process to try and get to the core of the issue. I should also just remind members that tax policy tends to be obviously market sensitive. So what we do is, when we first publish the book, that's the first time people will really see the bills. We did have an initial draft presented, but it's only when we put these things out on the website that people know that the announcement the minister made in February earlier this year in the budget, what that actually means in terms of legislation and how will it actually affect that. Because as you by now learn, tax is not just about the rate, but it's about the tax base. There's a lot of issues that come up. So what we do today is we take all those comments and we try and have an official response from the department. So there was a deadline. We still continue to see people after the deadline. We received all in all 90 written responses. Of course, we had 12 organizations that presented directly in the submission, and that I talked about a lot of these issues. I think that the workshops were on the issues on the tax-free savings, valuation issues around defined benefit contributions to the retirement fund. The issue of the small business cooperation tax regime certainly was an issue.
Do you mind just closing the door? I think the light's good for you.
And of course, the agricultural issue was a big issue, as was the issue of company cars and the valuation of fixed assets. So the TLAB really covers all the comments that have been made and includes issues where people have raised some of the issues, perhaps verbally with us, but we'll let you know about that. And I think the first thing we should note is, although technically we're also doing the rates book, there's been no comments made on the rates book. And that's sort of not surprising, because the only issue you can have with the rates book is the rate is too high or too low. And to be honest, it's an issue that you consult less on, because it's, so today we therefore go through the key points. Now what we do is, and yesterday we submitted the document, we said it's under embargo because until this hearing starts, we don't want anyone aside from members if you have any special advantage. And we've published this document, which is a draft response document, and I'll indicate to you why we say draft. And under it you'll see that when we put comments, those are not our comments, those are comments that tries to summarize from the submissions received what are people saying. Okay, so what were the outside comments? We then put our own response, and I should add, I put Department of National Treasury at SARS, because the minister sort of, whilst his brief really comes in at the end, so they represent, in a sense, a technical sort of response from our SARS and Department, because, and we call it a draft because it's not the final response, because we bring it to the committee, and it's really up for the committee to make decisions, whether you accept the recommendations we make or you not. And I should add, Chair, you are, feel free to make changes, or, you know, those are your recommendations. The minister obviously then wants to hear what the committee has said. Are they happy with the responses that we've outlined? Do you want to make changes? And he takes all of that account and then he finalizes his response. As you know, that once the money bill is tabled, the process to amend is quite a laborious process. Hence, we have this process of draft bills, draft response, etc. But when the minister tables the bill, expected to be next week, it is the final bill. And of course, Parliament does have a right to amend that, but that is going to be, as I said, quite a labored process. So that, I think, is just to outline the process. Now, if you look at the document, it therefore covers under these items the personal income tax issues and savings, the business tax, general business tax, its impact on financial institutions, and then we look at tax incentives, and then we look at international taxation, VAT, and lastly we look at changes to the tax admin laws amendment bill. So you look at, you know, this in the same order that we've really presented in most of our inputs and so on. Go ahead. Okay, so I'm going to ask the team maybe just to come in on various slides. Who wants to start the first one? What we've done, Chair, is to remember, is just to focus. We don't have too many slides. We've got how many? Okay. Which just will highlight the big issues, because really the issues should be around the document.
The first issue that we would go into would be the valuation of the fringe benefit or defined benefit contribution for disability funds such as the GPF and other types of funds. We're valuing the increase in the retirement interest that you get each year. It's quite difficult to use the actual value because it doesn't actually reflect what you may receive in retirement. So just in terms of the main comments that we got, quite a few commentators were on both sides of the fence here. Some wanted us to simplify the methodology to make it easier to value this benefit and take away the discretion from actuaries in terms of how the actuaries value the benefit. And other commentators wanted the actuaries to have more discretion in terms of how they actually value the benefit. So if you have more discretion, you might be able to get a value that's more closely relate to the benefit that they receive. But if you allow more discretion, then it might be easier for actuaries or others to be able to either massage assumptions or to make different assumptions compared to someone else. So you might have two people with exactly the same type of retirement benefits, but if an actuary makes a separate assumption, they might pay different tax. So we've gone with an approach where we sided with the commentators before that a simplified method, which was more prescriptive, was easier. And this relates to, because this was quite a complicated amendment, we actually had an initial draft back in May. The Chief Comments then did another draft through this process, and these are the second versions of the comments that we've received from this year. So we've gone into detail in this response document the reasons why we think the simplified method is better, but that's what we've gone for at the moment. Next slide. There were also quite a number of technical amendments to this. It's quite complicated. tried to chat with industry to get an idea of where the issues might be. So some of the types of issues are when we value what do we do with additional voluntary contributions, if somebody puts money into a fund in order to purchase part of service, what do you do with funds that are hybrid, so you have defined contribution funds that have benefits, defined benefits along with those defined contribution benefits. So we've worked with industry to try and find solutions there. We've also tried to take away some of the reporting requirements. Quite a few of the comments said they didn't need to report as much and it would be quite onerous to report. So we've taken away some of those reporting requirements. But I think that's all on that side. And then,
Can I get some guidance on procedure? Do members want to deal with each of these issues separately, or do we want an overview first before we come back to each of these issues? Other people want quickly, members?
Overview,
right.
So Chair, these provisions is contained in a set of regulations which we've updated, which we will make available to you at the same time we make the follow them.
To the next slide. I'll deal with the postponement. Chair, just on the postponement, we are going to propose that the amendment that we approved last year which dealt with firstly harmonization in the tax treatment of retirement funds. So it, for example, allowed, it was now taxing it in the hands of the employee or the, and it was put at a quite a high cap of 27.5% with a cap of 350,000 rand. Secondly, it said that if you enjoy the tax benefits, you also must annuitize. So that would also be extended to property funds. Now, this was not an issue that we intended to amend this year, so it's not in the original bill, just so that members know that. But there's been, quite a lot of interaction with particularly the trade unions, and the minister met with NADLAC last month, where people have felt that both labor and community constituencies have requested the need for more clarity on social security reform before that provision takes effect. But as we're also aware, there's also been lots of false, I don't know if all rumors are false, but false retirement rumors on nationalization of pension funds, on government forcing preservation. And that has led to some premature resignations where people have cashed in their retirement funds, the pension and provident funds, they resign from work and so on. Now, the cabinet has made quite a strong statement that to say the nationalization story is absolute rubbish. No laws, in fact, have changed the preservation. So though we don't like it, people can still continue to resign from their jobs and cash in their pension funds. We think that's not a good thing to do, apart from the fact that you also get taxed then when you cash out, when you pay tax, you're above the lowest thresholds. And we've also found that it's actually silly to resign from work thinking you can cash out, and then you may well find that your employer then not giving you back the job. Okay. I mean, we think that there's a lot of reasons around it. Sometimes it's just rationalization, the fact that people are perhaps over-indebted and they see this cash, and you need to really deal with this because you've had a situation with members of government pension funds, there you can't even argue nationalization because it does force the government, because it's always had, and nothing has actually changed, and there's no problem fund, so it's quite strange to see people resigning from the government pension fund when that doesn't even fall, by the way, under the pension funds act. It's, in fact, you have a few of these state pension funds that fall outside the net. We want to bring it into the net. But anyway, so those are the difficulties that we've had to deal with. So though the above laws, we think, bring more equity, because they clearly mean that, you know, very wealthy people are the people who save, but many would get a tax deduction of more than 350,000 rand. But we felt that we need to limit the amount and the loss to the fiscus. And though they extend the tax benefit, for example, to members of provident funds who don't enjoy a tax benefit, if they are above the threshold, and though we don't make any changes to preservation, we've agreed that we're willing to consider a delay of up to 2 years from 1st of March next year. Next slide. I think just to put it in context, we're saying that, you know, in I think it was in March, that we published after the budget this year an update on retirement reforms. We noted that those proposals generally must go to NADEC because you have to get buy-in. If we differ, we can then decide how to deal with issues. But because we do want to encourage members to preserve their retirement savings. Okay. I know that there's been some delay because of some confusion, because we've also been slow, let me say up front. But there are some technical issues that have arisen that we want. We've delayed our default regulations and the retail distribution review, as we promised. We said they would be out in May. We still intend to publish these and other draft regulations. They obviously would be put out for consultation, including via NADLAC. And we've done so, and I want to emphasize, and again, I've asked the chair to come and do a session on retirement reform, because I think we're quite passionate about those reforms. We think they're a good thing. We think that they put more power in the hands of members. We want to deal with issues of high charges. People complain about high charges in banks. Actually, the big disgrace and the real big scandal is the extent to which charges have been imposed on members, which often means that, you know, if you take one particular model, you save for 40 years, let's say the same amount per month that you put in for 40 years, you just had one job in your life, you'll find that your final retirement amount would actually be double that had there been reasonable charges. So, you know, half your savings is gobbled up by the industry just because they're not transparent, and because a 1% per annum charge looks small, but take it over 40 years, compound it, and it's actually massive. So it does mean that, you know, we don't want to delay on all those reforms. And some of those reforms, in fact, if we were to put a stop to them or to delay them, it does mean that those who benefit, big industries, for example, the funds, will benefit, and members will continue to lose. So we think it would be irresponsible to delay these things. There are things that we need to do, and in fact that perhaps we should have done 10 years ago. So the criticism could be at us that we didn't make these changes early. So the particular implication of this delay, just so that members are clear, is so the delay is only for the amendment that we passed in 2013, last year. And it means that the higher cap and the limit of 350 will be delayed until 2017. For many people, this will mean that they will only have a benefit up to the amount they've always had. This had promised to give people, because normally the percentage would be 22.22. You know, that would be the industry's 10%. And it used to be 15% of your non-retirement income for RA. This will mean that for many of those, that they will not get the further tax deduction that they would have enjoyed had we started implementing next year. And I should add here, because of a benefit like that, in fact, I have to be reminded that we had actually initially last year proposed a date of 1st March 2016. And the previous standing committee, I think some of the members who were there will remember, asked us to consider making it March 2015, and we readily agreed because we thought it's a good thing. But now we're saying we want to delay it from the original date to 2017. It does mean that contributions to Provident Funds, those that are above the threshold and making the contribution, will continue not to benefit from the tax deduction, which is something that holders of pension funds enjoy. Of course, many don't like the annuitization, but even on the annuitization, we said to our friends in Labour, for example, that most people in fact cash out. In fact, our evidence is people only keep funds up to 50,000 rand because they change jobs, they cash out. The 150,000 cap that you have currently, in fact, won't take effect for 5 years. So though we can't see the loss, but we understand that given the communication problems, that we need time to communicate to workers the benefits of having an annuitization so that they're not made vulnerable. And of course, there are issues that you want the incentives that, for example, that the means test is not used for social grants. So you don't punish the people who have saved by then saying you can't get a social grant when you retire. So there are some issues. So this will effectively also be delayed. It will mean that all their contributions up to 2017 will therefore fall under the current system where they can take it out in one lump sum. At any stage, I should say, even when the law takes effect in 2017, assuming the committee agrees with this proposal and it goes to Parliament, it means that even in 20, as it's the case now, even in 2025, all the amounts up to the date of 2017, 1st March 2017, are in terms of the current rule. It's only new contributions after 1st of March 2017 that will be affected, and only for amounts above 150,000, and only for those who are below 5 years. So it means if you're 53 now, you wouldn't have benefited from this. Now you benefit effectively from today, 53 years. So, Chair, I think we thought this we should bring to your attention. There's quite a lot of noise around it, and I think that it wasn't there in the original proposal. And there are loopholes that we want to deal with last year, like with municipal funds, but that we do next year through a proper process. You want to deal with tax freeze?
Thanks, The tax free savings comments, Chair, is in detail on the response document on pages 8 and 9. Now, we received comments on this to the fact that the monthly or the annual contributions and the lifetime contributions are too low and should be adjusted, and also that the 40% charge on excessive contributions are too high. I think we have indicated to the committee that we think those thresholds are reasonable, and obviously, the 30,000 will be adjusted with inflation. The 500,000 one would not adjust annually, but you can adjust it over time. The one area that we do think requires some more work is that we might look at a higher annual contribution limit for people 65 and older, given that we already have a different tax dispensation for people 65 and older, and that for the short term I spend. So that on a penalty of
total lifespan from 65.
On the 40%, we think that is reasonable because there are different mechanisms how you can prevent overcontribution. The more complicated one is that you actually reverse the contribution. This one is pretty simple, and we think most people would be by that. The next one is the more technical issues about what type of products and service providers will qualify, and the comments that we received that the legislation was a bit broad, and we corrected that. We will also, by way of a notice, the minister will issue a notice and regulation, spell out specifically more in detail the type of products that will qualify. These regulations will be published by the end of October. We have been consulting with the industry on that. And it will be regulated by the FSB. It's not a tax issue as such. Because it's a savings type product, we will issue the regulations in terms of the Income Debt Act, but the FSB will be regulated to make sure that the service provider adheres to the standards that we are proposing. And we make the regulations available to the FSB. Next one. Here, Chair, a amendment that we make in terms of how do you determine fringe benefits. I think my SARS colleagues might come in here and just explain a little bit about the history, how this was done up to now, and then we can explain to you why we made the amendment. Franz, you want to?
Essentially, the difficulty here is that you're looking at cost, and cost is usually a pretty good indicator of what a person in you or I would have to pay for whatever the product is. Because remember, the idea behind fringe benefits is there should be neutrality between you getting a salary and spending the money on something and being given the something directly. Of course, if you are a large motor manufacturer, your cost of a motor vehicle is substantially lower than what you or I can get it for, and that creates certain problems because it creates an inequity compared with somebody who was in that industry working there, who get a nice expensive car for very little and be taxed at a relatively low rate, as compared to anybody else who got the same car and would be taxed at a much higher charge. And so that gives you a bit of a background as to where this comes from and why this is proposed.
Our understanding is that when fringe benefit was introduced, there was a ruling issued against which the motor industry employees were calculated the fringe benefit. SARS withdrew that ruling about a year ago and came up with a different interpretation out, and it caused a lot of stir. We then said, okay, we will provide an amendment that will come into effect the 1st of March. It will use a retail market price is the basis for which you calculate the fringe benefit. The motor industry has been objecting to this particular amendment. We had a meeting with them, and the proposal is, Chair, that we continue with this particular amendment. That we continue with this particular amendment, and that we will, by regulation, provide a more clarity on how retail market value will be determined. There is also the argument that the motor industry put forward that their employees don't have a choice in the type of car they drive, and therefore the benefit they get is slightly different from what ordinary individuals get when they work for another company that is not a specific type of model that you're supposed to drive. We think if they do have a strong case, one can take that into account, but we'll have to quantify the extent of that additional discount, if one could call it like that. So we will be working on the draft regulations in time for when this come out, this law become effective 1st of March next year. The bottom point there was just to bring to your attention, although NAMSA didn't come to the committee, I strongly have some reservations on this. We are engaging with them. The next issue is this famous 23M and 23N. Now we have in the workshop took you through all the pros and cons on this particular amendment. The bottom line is that we have taken into account all the comments that we've received. We think they merit that we proceed with this particular amendment. It makes a contribution to our efforts to protect the tax base, especially in the context of base erosion and profit shifting. There are some technicalities that we have to deal with. There is the question of the interaction with different sections of the law. The next slide, please. But in general, we made an amendment that have a formula that is adjustable, and most were happy with that. The two big issues that were raised was the definition of controlling relationships and the issue of guarantees. The controlling relationship, if you can remember, was quite high. I think it was sort of an order of 80%. We've now agreed to adjust that to 50%. And whereas previously we included loans that were subject to guarantees, in this particular provision we now provide for them an exemption. And both these amendments deal with most of the concerns that were raised. The other issue that were raised by taxpayers was the issue of transfer pricing and the interaction with Section 23N. And we are of the view that these, are, although they're related, they don't overlap because they try to address different issues. We think we have adequately responded to the objective of the section and the objective of transfer pricing. Next slide. And R&D chair, we also received quite a lot of comments, and I think in the committee also received input on this issue. The amendments to the R&D are of a pretty technical nature. That is covered on page 20 and 21 of the document. The important amendments that we have done this year was the regulations that covers pharmaceutical, the pharmaceutical industry, specifically clinical trials and generic medicines. And as we said, the department that leads in terms of the education process here is the Department of Science and Technology. The one outstanding issue that we still developed is the use of the word innovator. Now, the whole intention of the incentive is to encourage innovation, but there is a very difficult interpretation around the word innovative. Some taxpayers say we should drop it completely. Others are of the view within the department that we should keep it and don't make the bar too low. We have agreed with the Department of Science and Technology that we will not define it in the law. As yet, they will divide the guidelines to see if we can develop it, and we'll come back to the committee next year on this particular issue. On Small Business Corporation, Chair, the amendment was mooted by the Davis Tax Committee in their initial report on small business, and you aware of the nature of the proposal to do away with the graduated small business tax. Small business corporation regime that provides for lower taxes for certain small businesses. To replace that with a refundable tax rebate to cover compliance costs. The reactions here was mixed. Next slide. And some of the commentators suggested that we should retain the existing regime. Others say that we should up the credit if we want to continue with it. And I think given the mixed reaction, we agreed to withdraw this particular proposal and reconsider it in consultation with various stakeholders.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things, I mean, we're trying to see, can we fast track some of the Davis Committee's proposals? And obviously, had there been unanimous or almost unanimous support, we would have proceeded. But I think their process is also going on, so it would make sense to await their final outcome as well.
Okay. The next big issue that was brought to the attention of the committee was our proposal to withdraw the zero rating on certain agricultural inputs in France.
Thanks,
sir.
Thanks, Cecil. Members of the committee, you will recall this was a highly emotive and charged issue where we spent a number of interactions with yourself as well as industry. In a nutshell, industry advanced that the removal of the zero rating would create, in essence, cash flow problems in the VAT system. They articulated from their own members the statistics, which we accepted and we reviewed in terms of the impact. We met again with them and we met with other stakeholders that tags along to the system, namely the financiers who provide production loans. And our last interaction, we proposed to them exactly what we presented to you, that the impact on their cash flow was not as high as what they had proposed. In fact, we collated, consulted and answered some of the questions raised by the PBO. Our view is that the impact is not as significant as the industry proposed. Our figures were, to a large extent, very lenient, where we afforded worst-case scenarios in terms of interest. We adopted the higher interest values. We've given them the benefit of the doubt on 3 months interest period. And we demonstrated that the increases out of every rand, if they don't do anything at all, would cost them around 1.5 cents in interest. So the committee at the last meeting during our session proposed that we do further work with the industry. More in particular, we've asked the industry to quantify some of the unquantified contentions that they've had. And the committee voted the direction that we should take is we should consider this proposal after a year, but in the meantime we would put a placeholder in law that this will happen no earlier than 12 months, and during that period we would find a meaningful way to continue with the stakeholders in eliciting more information based on the unintended consequences. We've been ongoing in our consultation with the Department of Agriculture. As and when the information we seek is made available, we will try and plug this thing up during the next 12 months.
Thank you. So the bottom line, Chair, is that we have this proposal in the law, but it will only take effect the earliest 12 months from now, by way of a notice. Should we continue with the proposal, and we'll come back to the committee also. That really is the main amendments to the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill. Franz will talk to the
I've just flagged one issue, and it was around what is relevant material. Taxpayers think they should be able to determine what it is. We think that SARS is due to do that. We provided the response to the vacuum for that view, and essentially the concern that did emerge was what happened if there were over-reporting requests from the auditor, and we've sketched out the process that you would follow if there were such over-reporting requests. Essentially, you would first engage with SARS management, our complaint resolution mechanism. If you needed to, you would approach the tax ombud. And again, I think we've demonstrated, that's page 37 and 38, on the public response document, that's in line with what international practice would be.
Yeah, that really is the overview.
Yeah.
The document is quite a more extensive document. It goes into pretty detail for the technical stuff. And we do that because we have published this for the wider tax experts out there to see what.
Yeah, I don't expect members to have memorized this. We only got it yesterday. Others would have memorized it. But actually, I did browse through it. Not that I understood. This is the new thing I read, but it's quite comprehensive. Actually, it's remarkable. You know, I'm a bit taken aback at the quality of what's here. But having said that, I think we should move swiftly now to look at each issue. Members may have something to say about what are these slides 8 and 9 on the valuation of tax benefits. What's the view of members? Yeah, I'll go for lunch. Okay, you can talk to me. Lunch, all right, okay, fine. Can I put a proposal to members now that we're all here? Do we really need a whole hour for lunch? So half an hour, please, thank you. 1 minute to the back.